Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Choate and I'm here with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
Good. We're doing good here too. I feel like we should call May Madness. Like some people believe in March Madness, but anyone who has children or, you know, I feel like there's just a sense of spring makes this time of year just a little crazy. I don't know if anyone else is out there feels the same way, but with all the school stuff, if your kids are in school, you know, graduations, and it feels like kids' energy is just like through the roof. All the weather is changing. It's all kind of weird and everyone's kind of burnt out from a whole school year. And I know this last year has been crazy as far as schooling and all the different changes and stuff, but I call this May Madness. It's just a crazy, crazy time. And we chose to homeschool this last year, and I'm feeling like, oh my goodness, I'm so needing just a break, just a change, because we've been doing the same thing for months and really grown a lot, but my kids are like, yeah, we'll just call it May Madness.
I know exactly how you feel. Like, so our kids last spring started doing like remote learning, and it's just felt like one long year with, you know, both you and I, we have a lot of kids and having all the kids at home. So most of our kids continued with the at home learning that we weren't doing homeschool, but we were doing like a cyber school option. And there's so many things that have broken down with having all the kids at home for more than a year now.
Yeah.
So, it's almost like this long, long summer vacation.
Right. It's, yeah. There's been some things that have been amazing and things we've had to learn and grow together. And then there's some things that have just been still really challenging. So if anyone else is feeling the same way, it's a few more weeks till we hit June and get into real summer. So we're with you. You're not alone. All right. So today we're going to be talking about how to change the narrative. We talk a lot about narrative here at High Thrive Coaching, probably more than anyone else out there, because this is a really big thing that we discovered several years ago after working with literally thousands of students like you guys around the world. And we realized that a lot of other programs and even we in our early days here at High Thrive Coaching were really missing the importance of the story that we develop in our relationships, stories that we have about ourselves, stories we have about our spouse, and stories that we have about the relationship itself. When these stories start to go south, when they have a really negative perception of us, a really negative belief about the marriage, their happiness here, then that becomes a huge obstacle that needs to be overcome and addressed fully. And without it, we're missing a big piece of being able to heal a relationship fully. So we're going to go into that a little bit deeper. I know that on our last podcast, we talked about the four steps to save your marriage from divorce. That is what we specialize in here at High Thrive Coaching. And so we're going to go deeper into the very beginning kind of part there about the narrative, what it really is, and then why it's so important that we help our spouse let go of that story they have about us. And maybe we even revisit the story that we have about the relationship or ourselves and then be able to restore the relationship fully. Before we get into that, though, let's share our client win of the week, which is a throwback win from Kelly. So, Mark, you want to share this one?
Yeah, Kelly is sharing. She said, I just barely got started with this program. And last night, my husband, who has been involved with another woman for almost 2 years, she says she was unaware but knew something was horribly wrong. Her husband asked her to renew their wedding vows as soon as the pandemic is under control. Says we can just have a pastor at the church we married in do it as soon as he's willing if I don't want to wait. She says she's on cloud nine. There are some big changes that can happen when you apply the right solutions here. So like her husband involved with another woman for 2 years and turns around and says, hey, let's like work on this. Let's recommit. Let's get this going again. That was a big win for Kelly. And we see this a lot, honestly. This is, you know, I kind of get, as odd as this sounds, I kind of get numb to like these big wins because we see them a lot in our, in our group. But you know, I have to remind myself, this is a big deal. These sort of things.
It is. Yeah. And this was about a year ago. Like we said, this is a throwback win. And reason why we kind of wanted to revisit it was because Kelly was a very active client. She really did the work. And we've been able to follow her over the past year through all of the COVID craziness, you know, even in here into May madness. And been able to see that as she's applied these principles, she's experienced a lot of healing and growth in her life. So not only did she kind of have a huge win after just getting started with her husband wanting to renew their wedding vows, but the progress, it's still a bit of a roller coaster, right? It always goes up and down, but it's been an up and down in a generally upwards trend, which is always what we want to see. It's never a straight line to the top, right? But even with those kind of ups and downs, kind of the ping pong effect going back and forth, they are making incredible progress. So really, really good. All right, Mark. So let's say that no one has listened to our podcast before. Maybe that's you guys. Maybe you've been following us for a while. But let's say you have never heard of us before and you don't know what the PATH method is and you don't really know what we're talking about when it comes to narrative. Can you explain what the narrative is and why it's really important that we uncover what it is to save a relationship?
Mm-hmm. I think the best way to explain this is to discuss almost like a basic principle of this idea of facts versus stories. So you know, as I'm thinking about like how to explain this best, I'm thinking, okay, I'm thinking to myself, Mark, you don't want to sound condescending. I think like there's this kind of basic idea that I don't think a lot of people recognize in themselves, and that, you know, a lot of times we all judge many aspects of our lives based on what's really subjective, and I'm going to put it in quote truths, meaning the truth that we may come up with might not be 100% accurate. And I think there are a lot of facts within our relationship. You know, as an example, if you're having a lot of trouble, you might see that, okay, your husband didn't tell you the truth, or your wife might be involved in another relationship, or perhaps your spouse contacted an attorney. And these are very objective facts. These are things that have happened without judgment to it. Now, what happens a lot, actually, what I would say what happens with everyone is we come up with stories and judgments surrounding these facts. You know, so maybe your husband didn't tell you the truth and you say, okay, he doesn't care about me, or he is a liar, or my husband is totally set on divorce. And now you've entered into this realm where you're not actually talking about facts. Even if you're saying they're totally set on divorce, you can't say that for certain. Even, you know, you might be able to say, my husband said he's totally set on divorce, that would be a fact. But anytime that you start getting into motivation or you start passing judgment on facts, this is what we're talking about in terms of stories. Now, why we talk about this a lot is if your marriage is in peril, if there's a lot of trouble in your relationship, there are factual things that have happened, yes, but I can guarantee that negative stories have developed as well. So I think what a really good example of this is a client I was working with a little while back. And, you know, met with this guy and you know, my first impression of him is like, oh, he seems like a really polite, mild-mannered sort of person. And so I was really kind of surprised that, you know, when I got into my first interview with him, you know, just trying to figure out what's going on, one of the very common questions that I ask and during a first meeting is I say, okay, well, what's going on with your relationship? What are the complaints? And he says, well, my wife says that I've been very abusive towards her. And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting to hear. And I don't want to dismiss those things. That's a very serious claim. And you know, to Heather, you know, we take things like abuse very seriously. And we will often say, okay, if there's abuse going on, I'm not going to help this person, this abusive partner, get back with their spouse. So already, like, here's some judgments kind of coming around this story here. And so my immediate reaction, as you know, as a professional, is like, okay, I'm going to ground this in facts and get away from stories. What is actually going on? So this client, his wife claimed that he was abusive, that he was alcoholic. But we had another fact. We had a fact that the court, friends, family found no evidence of this. So I said, okay, let's actually get some more facts. Let's say, how often are you drinking? He says, well, I go and drink socially with some friends, maybe about once a week. I was like, okay, this does not sound like an alcoholic. So let's check in with abuse. Okay, well, why would your wife say that you're abusive? And he's like, well, I ask, okay, have you ever struck your wife? Have you ever been overly physical with her? He says, no, never happened. So where's this abuse coming from? He says, well, she says that I raise my voice sometimes and when I'm upset. And so here I'm thinking, not an abusive situation. Now, obviously, I did my due diligence and I checked further and I wanted to make sure that this was really going on and that my client wasn't just minimizing the problems, which is another thing that happens. But like Heather, you get the situation here. Here is this story that developed in the relationship that wasn't really grounded in really firm facts. And so I'm going to ask you, Heather, like, do you ever see stories like this develop in your own relationship or maybe in, you know, sometimes friends that you know? I know I have a bunch of stories, but I want to hear from, I've been talking for a while. Hear from you.
Oh no, you're so good. So I've shared my story very openly many times, and at the risk of being redundant, I'll share it yet again. So if you've already heard my story and it sounds redundant, fine. Put yourself in your in you know, look at these things through your relationship and yourself. So okay, to make a long story short, didn't realize that I had a belief in myself, a subconscious belief that I wasn't good enough, that people were going to leave me, and that no matter how hard I tried, it wasn't going to be enough. And so because I had this story, things that my husband Ben would do in our early years felt very threatening to me, like, oh, see, here it comes. I'm not good enough. I'm not, you know, holding up to what the standard I need to be. And so he's going to leave me. And as long as I held on to that belief, which was at a deeper, like I said, I never feel like I really recognized it consciously, except I felt like fear, right? It felt like, oh my goodness, I've got to grasp onto something because here it comes. This is it, right? And even little things were become a really big thing in our relationship, okay? Because I saw it through the lens of that fear and that story. And then I'm sure Ben, you know, along the years, and he's even told this to me in some instances, had a story about me. Heather's really controlling. Heather's very paranoid. Heather doesn't trust me, right? And I didn't really trust him in a lot of ways because I was afraid he was going to leave me, and I was afraid here it comes. So all of this built up over years and years and years, and created some very unhealthy cycles, and finally got to the point where this is about 6 years ago when I got diagnosed with breast cancer and was looking at. You know, doctors told me I had a 5% chance of making it to this day. So, not a high probability of survival. And I had to really look at what was happening in our relationship, what was happening inside of me, and where this was really coming from. And I started to get this awareness that I had this belief that I wasn't good enough and it wasn't true. So this is like the deepest level, right? Is when we really get to that layer by layer, peeling it back to uncover what the root of it all is. When you finally heal it at that level, then the symptoms, the surface level cycles, the things that we say to each other, the patterns that we get into in a relationship of, you know, pursuing, avoiding, all these different dynamics, those resolve themselves, right? Or they take some time to learn the skills, but those things then heal as well. So that's a really high level overview. But it was really coming to that place of recognizing that I was good enough. I was worthy. I'm deserving of love, and I don't have to try. Everyone is. I'm nothing special. Everyone is deserving of that. And that is the truth. So that helped me let go of a lot of that fear that I was looking through that lens of fear at different situations with Ben, and see that there was another truth there, that the way I'd been looking at the whole situation was an error. And the way that he was looking at the situation in many times was also in error, but we both believed it. Why? Because these stories come up to protect us. They come up to keep us safe from pain. They come up to help us not feel guilty about something. They're there to protect us as like a defense mechanism, but they aren't true. And the reason why they've developed, right, all these things have happened over the years is because as children, I don't know if you know this, but I just learned this about, I like neuroscience and I like psychology, that a baby, from the time it is born until 2 years old, its brain waves are in delta, purely delta, which means like deep, deep sleep. We've got delta, we've got theta, we've got alpha and beta. Delta is the deepest level of sleep. So a baby, when it's born, is literally living in its subconscious mind for 2 years. And then it goes between delta and theta, which is kind of that dreamy, drowsy state in between being awake and asleep, until they're about six. So the first 6 years of life, we're doing nothing but downloading information. We do not have any analytical facilities to question the information that we're getting. So we just take it all in. So whether that's, we're told, you know, I love you, and then your mom hits you, and then you get hit, and then you're told that you're loved, right? Or you're told that, you know, big boys don't cry, or little girls should be seen and not heard, or men should not be trusted. Anything like that, we just take that story and we believe it, and we just, it's just there, right? It isn't until about, you know, 11 or 12 that we start to develop our analytical mind and start to question some of the things that are coming in and create our own story about it. So with that being said, let's give us all a little bit of grace that the things that we picked up on early in life just kind of coded themselves into our brain and set the stage for a story that we have developed over the years. By the time we're 35, 90% of who we are is a set of wired programs and hardwired like into our brain. And we think that we're really conscious of what we're doing and what we're choosing, but most of it is a complete subconscious program by the time we're 35. And we're only operating with about 10% of our conscious mind. So don't know if that's helpful to anyone. I find it really fascinating because it helps me understand with a little bit more compassion with everything that we've gone through, and some awareness that just because we had this story programmed from early childhood and we've been living it and we've been finding all this evidence to us, see, it's true. See, this person abandoned me. This person betrayed me, right? On and on. See, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. We can choose a different story, and we can do that. And our brain can become reprogrammed. We can uncover the truth of who we are and help our spouse to let go of the unhealthy truths that they have as well. Of course, we can't control them letting go of the story, but our method here is to help them see the new story and see the reality of what might be going on instead of the false story. So we'll go into that a little bit more, but that's a little bit about my story and why it's really crucial we uncover the narrative, because it's really the root of almost every single thing that we experience, good or bad. So Mark, what's your experience?
Yeah, I'm going to point out, like, this goes the other direction as well. So you had this really trying time in your life with developing cancer and whatnot, and it sounds to me like there were some positive stories that developed between you and Ben as well. You know, Jen and I have similar experiences. You know, we've overcome some really big hardships. And so these positive stories start to develop there. And I do think that a lot of relationships are created and strengthened or destroyed based on the stories that we adopt. And a big part of this is that, you know, we start to develop these stories, and then the tendency is for people to take these stories and strengthen them. They do this by finding, and I'm going to put in quotes, evidence that those stories are true. And I'm putting it in quotes because it's a very subjective thing. It's something that's very much about, like, okay, your opinion, and it's not really evidence. And a lot of what's going on here is what's called confirmation bias. It's this tendency to reinforce the beliefs and the stories that we create. So we say, okay, here's a thought. Maybe my spouse doesn't care about me. And now I go a little bit further and I see, okay, see, they were on their phone while we were sitting next to each other on the couch. See, here's this bit of evidence. Mm-hmm. Here's this confirmation. And then they were a little bit quiet in the car. Ah, another thing that they don't really want to talk to me. And when really, like, I'm giving these examples, this evidence, and really these are just, it's open to interpretation. So there is a lot of this that goes on in our lives, both for positive and negative. So, you know, a story that developed in my own relationship is that, you know, we have positive stories too. I have this story that Jen will be there for me in any situation, like, because we've gone through some hard times. She's been very reliable. She's been very supportive. And anytime that I see that I'm struggling and she approaches me and helps me out, I make a little mental note and say, hey, here's a little bit more extra evidence of this. At the same time, you know, like, I have a negative story. I'm saying, okay, like, I struggle with this idea that, okay, people don't really care. People don't really, you know, I don't really matter to people. And this is something that I'm a little bit sensitive to at times. And I look for evidence of that. And it's kind of this odd thing, like, yeah, Jen is there to support me, but I also find a lot of evidence, like, okay, you know, what I do doesn't matter, kind of sort of idea. If I'm, you know, especially if I'm tired or I'm worn down or something. And what's interesting is we keep, you know, just unconsciously, we stack up little bits of evidence unless we're really thoughtful about the kind of story that we're trying to develop. So, and this is, you know, we've just been explaining stories this entire time. I hope this is helpful so far. This is the reason why I wanted to explain this, though, is it applies very much to situations where the marriage is disintegrating, and, you know, we really need to think about what kind of stories have developed in order to fix the relationship. So, Heather, I'm thinking about this, and, you know, I gave it a lot of thought in terms of how do you even begin to affect a story? And, you know, I was thinking about, okay, well, where do these stories come from? How do we develop them in the first place? Why is there maybe resistance to shifting a story? The kind of unifying factor that I came up with is this idea of trust and vulnerability. And we develop our stories based off of trusted sources and how vulnerable we can be. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Heather? Like, stories connected to trust and vulnerability.
Yeah, I love that. I think that this is going to be a really great bridge, because I've heard a lot of clients talk about how, okay, I understand the story is important. I get it that my spouse has this story. In fact, while those of you who are watching live on Thriving Marriage, I'd love to hear what some of your spouse's stories about you are, or about the relationship are, because that's always...
People.
Yeah, we can see the comments and love to be able to help you with that. What will often happen, right, is we'll have, say, I'm just making this up on the spot, but, you know, based on so many clients we've talked to, you know, a husband saying, my wife feels like I'm not emotionally supportive of her, and so she wants out. She feels like she'd be happier if we went our separate ways, and that there's no love anymore. She says, I love you, but I'm not in love with you because you don't emotionally support me. Okay, that's the story that we hear. And then a lot of you guys are like, okay, I get that the story is important. Here's what my spouse is saying. Here's why I think she, you know, this is the reasons why I think that she or he believes this way. So now I'm going to prove to them that the story is not true. And then they get into a lot of action to prove to her, I am emotionally supportive. So whatever that looks like, I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to bring you flowers. I'm going to listen more, right? You do all these actions to show her, hey, I am emotionally supportive of you. And you, you know, maybe apologize for the times in the past that you weren't, and you write this big letter and you go to the couple's therapy and all this different thing, right? But what happens is she doesn't believe you, right? She still wants out. She says, hey, I see you're making these changes, but I think you're just manipulating me to try to get me back, and doesn't believe that that's really true, that she can let the story go. She doesn't feel safe enough to let it go. And that here, I mean, does that sound familiar? Right? I would say, you know, 99% of the people I talk to, they're in this kind of situation. And then they start to lose hope because they say, I'm doing all these changes, I'm working on me, and it's not working. It's not enough. So this relationship must be over. There's nothing we can do. But that's really where people misunderstand that this level of trust comes into play, because if they're not believing the changes you're making, if they believe it's a manipulation, then you're lacking this level of trust. And so let's talk about now what really helps to build that level of trust, even if your spouse is wanting out, even if they're not believing that the changes you're making are real or lasting or for the right reasons. Because let's face it, that is a big hurdle to overcome. How do you show that these things are true about you when they have all this evidence against you? They're so firm in their story. They don't want to let that defense mechanism go. At this stage of a relationship, it's really important that we get to a place that's healthy enough, right? We have to build a level of stability first before we go into really pushing for deeper intimacy, connection, and trust, okay? Mm-hmm. So that being said, is a little bit of a preface here, that there's things in the path process that lead up to this point, but it's really important that they feel it on a deep level. Okay, it is safe to open up. It is safe to let go of this. So Mark, in helping so many clients overcome this hurdle of, I don't believe that these changes are real, and I don't want to let my story go, to the place of, I know that these changes are real, and I trust you, and I'm ready to let the story go. I'm ready to believe a new story about you. What have you seen are the biggest factors in helping to build up that trust, even in this kind of shaky stage?
Yeah, so I do think consistency is a big piece. But like you said, Heather, one of the things that will happen is they'll say, okay, I can see that you've changed, but I don't trust it. So, mm-hmm. you know, you do have to demonstrate that consistency, absolutely. This is kind of like this first step. Like, so if they're saying, my partner doesn't care about me, then you need to consistently show that you care. I do think that there's almost like this factual side of what's going on. You know, there's the facts, and then there's the stories. And so we have to actually demonstrate this. But then I think how you approach the subject is also really important. So I think that if you are confident in your own changes, like if you can trust yourself, is a big factor. And I think people pick up on this. You know, if you were like, well, you know, I think I've changed, you know, why can't you see it? I'm, you know, it really kind of detracts away from that story because you don't trust yourself.
Right. It comes off as fake and even gimmicky sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe you really are doing these things just to get them back. And that's not what we're about here. Other programs will talk to you about like little hacks or mind games that you can do to make them get back with you. And none of that is built on a solid foundation. So you won't have real confidence in what you're doing. You know it's a manipulation trying to get them back, and they know it too. But when you shift that to have confidence of this is who I really am, I'm not doing it perfectly. I want to preface that. Like, we're talking about consistency, confidence. It does not mean perfection. I know a lot of people get hung up like, I'm really trying to make these changes, but then I messed up. I lost my cool, or I got victim, you know, I felt like a victim again and started whining or complaining or whatever, right? And they're like, dang it, I ruined it. It's over. No, it's not. It's not about perfection, but it is about progress. And when you do that from a genuine place because you want to be this person, that's when you have that confidence and your spouse will sense it too. And then you get to a place, Mark, we talk about taking the pressure off because you have this like calm confidence inside yourself. You no longer feel the need to force it to work, to make them come back, right? And you're kind of like, I'm okay no matter what happens, you know? I'm okay. And that is a very attractive place to be. It's very attractive for you to be there because you feel calm and confident, and it's attractive to your spouse too. They'll definitely feel the difference.
Now, you're touching on this kind of area, like it's almost like this line of confidence and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important piece there because you're talking about not being perfect, and which is kind of an odd thing when you're talking about confidence. But it is this line that you're walking where you're saying, hey, I'm trusting in my changes, but I'm going to be real and genuine and vulnerable. It makes it look so much more genuine if you're coming at it this from this approach of like, you know what, hey, maybe I make some mistakes, but I'm confident. I'm going to address those, and I'm going to actually do something about it. This is like a really great way to approach this, you know, trying to establish some trust. And then as you are able to receive their vulnerability as well, their fears, and create some safety around that, these are all, you know, going to be key factors. Actually, you know, I'm going to get ahead of myself a little bit. What we're going to talk about this just very briefly at the end, but we are going to talk a lot more about building trust next week. Heather and I were kind of like, what are we going to talk about next week? We're planning, but I'm already deciding right here. This is going to be the perfect topic for our next podcast. So building trust, consistency, confidence, vulnerability, and safety. And I will say that trust is heavily related to how vulnerable or open one can be with others in specific areas. And so a large part of what's happened is these negative stories have developed because an individual does not feel the ability to be vulnerable in a given area surrounding that story. So Heather, you talk about not feeling good enough. You know, I recognize that sometimes I'm vulnerable to not being feeling valued or cared for. And it's hard to be open sometimes on those subjects that we're vulnerable to. You know, so if your partner is saying, I am, you know, I'm feeling disrespected, I'm feeling like I don't matter, I'm feeling like we don't have a connection, this is going to be a really sensitive area, very likely for them. And they've probably lost the ability to accept, you know, that item from you. They found evidence of whatever this vulnerability is. Now I'm going to give an example of something like this. This actually just occurred just last week between Jen and I.
See, even in healthy relationships, we go up with dances all the time. I still, just being completely honest, Ben and I have been married 15 years, and I love that Mark's going to share this. But yeah, I still run into this. Like, I've got this really fake story about his intentions or why he did something, and it isn't until I just clear that and find out what's really going on. So anyway, even in really healthy, these relationships, these things come up all the time.
I want to give this example because I feel like there's two ways that we can go when we have these vulnerable stories. And I want to give, because actually this was a win for Jen and I. And so, you know, sometimes we're, you know, Heather and I were really like, oh, we struggle too. But I want to give you some healthy examples here because I felt like Jen and I were really healthy in this. So, Jen and I have been on this kick. We've actually been seeing this life coach together. We want to get on top of things. And so we've been trying to get some goals going. We've been going to the gym more. So Jen came back from the gym and was really happy, you know, she worked hard. I was at home with the kids. I had a meeting going, and you know, right before she came back, like the last 20, 30 minutes before she came back, the kids were screaming outside my door and yelling at each other. It sounded like people were getting hurt. And so there was a lot of tension and frustration. And so I messaged Jenna, said, you know, she'd been gone already a little over 2 hours. I was like, hey, you need to get home. And she got home, and I was like, hey, I need some support. You need to be here. I'm trying to work. And at the same time, the kids are hurting each other and crazy. Jen took this as, you know, I want you to hear this story. Mark doesn't want me to be happy. I'm not able to accomplish my goals because other people need me. You know, when I try to improve myself, other people have a hard time. These were the stories that were going on. She got very upset at this. I got upset because I was already stressed, and, you know, I was thinking, I'm going to admit, I was thinking to myself, here's Jen, she's taking 2.5 hours for herself, and I'm dealing with all this while trying to work. Now, we could have left it at this, and this would have been, you know, if we let this sort of story grow, it would have been terrible. We were both not in a good place right then. A little while later, I came back around, and this is something I recommend a lot of people do. After you have this poor moment, you circle back, and I said, you know, hold on. I heard what you said there, Jen, and I said, you know, I want to make this clear. I actually really want you to be able to take time for yourself. And she says, well, you were so upset. And I said, okay, hold on. I want you to be able to take time for yourself. This is important to me. And I'm really happy to see you accomplishing your goals. And so I had to be very confident in this positive story. And I didn't let her, you know, take it in that other direction. And the thing is, these moments, it can go in two directions here. You can either reinforce that negative story, or you can reinforce the positive story. And we did settle things, and I was able to explain to Jen that this is what I wanted. She's actually at the gym right now. I'm doing this podcast. And, you know, so she's happy with that. And this is what creates a really healthy relationship, is these navigations of these sort of moments where it could go in either direction. I don't know. Do you see stuff like this yourself, Heather? I imagine you and Ben have these moments as well.
Absolutely. You know, yeah.
How do you create trust around these vulnerable stories in your relationship?
Right. So just a quick example from us within the last 2 or 3 weeks. I had a really, really hard day with the kids. 14-year-old was really belligerent, fighting with siblings. The toddler was not going on the bathroom like she's supposed to with potty training, you know, and the other girl was making a huge mess everywhere. And I was just going felt like one disaster to the next. And I realized that I've tried to like spare Ben a lot of the chaos in the home because he's going through a lot himself. And so I try to be a buffer there so I don't overwhelm him more. And I'm trying to manage his emotions, actually, which I don't have any control over. So it's a good insight for me to learn that I'm trying to do this. Because if I try to do it and it doesn't work, then I feel even worse, like what I'm doing isn't enough. So it does not feed into a healthy story. Anyway, that night I was like, I just got to tell him, like, this was such a hard day. I did this, this, and this, and this, and this. And then Benjamin did this. And then Naomi was here. And then I'm not even focusing on Ellie, the toddler. Like, oh my goodness, this is too much. It's just so, so challenging. And I feel so lost. And he listened a little bit, you know, and then he just turned around and went to bed. Didn't say a word to me. And I didn't know why. And I felt like I just put myself out there. I finally was authentic to what I'm going through. And I felt like I got nothing, right? Talking about not feeling emotionally supported, no hug. You know, I was looking for some compassion. I was being a victim and I was looking for some sympathy. And he just said, you know, he just went right to bed. So that made me really mad and made me have a story. Ben doesn't care. Why should I even share with him the problems if I'm all alone anyway? So I have this story here, right? I have to take care of the problems. I have to not share them with Ben so he doesn't get more stressed and I'm alone. So it festered in me all day, as these stories tend to do, right? And we can build more and more evidence of them. And then finally, we both just realized, okay, we got to sit down and find out what's really going on here. And I shared with him how it hurt me that he just turned around and left. And he shared with me how he felt like, because of conversations in the past, we don't feed stories of victimhood. And he recognized I was feeling like a victim. And so the best thing to do is just walk away. And so me understanding it wasn't because he didn't care. It's because he thought he was doing the best thing. So anyway, we talked about how we might be able to have these conversations in the future that still doesn't encourage victimhood, but doesn't just leave me hanging there. So yeah, that's just another example. And if we hadn't come together to rebuild that trust and create a new story, then I would have continued to feel I'm alone. He doesn't support me. He doesn't care about me. I can't share my problems with me. And he would have continued with stories of like Heather doesn't open up to me or, you know, share things with me too. So that's just a little example of how powerful these stories are and how they can totally set us off in different directions. And we need to be mindful of them and work to reconcile quickly with each other, understand each other. The first step in path is perspective. The most challenging thing about our story, and I understand like some of you are like, well, our stories are way deeper and worse and more complicated than that. And I get it. We've been there too. The most important thing is that when we're so stuck in our story, it's all about us. It's all about me. Can you see in like Jen's story, it was about her. And Mark's story was about him. And my story was about me. And Ben's story was about him. Well, kind of me too, but I didn't see it. And it wasn't until we learned, you know, to set our own story down and understand where they're coming from. And when we understand where our partner's coming from, it gives us compassion. Even if we don't approve of what they're doing, even if what they're doing is still not right, we can understand where they're actually coming from, what's leading to this choice that they're making. And as we show that compassion and that vulnerability on our part, and what happens there is it creates that sense of safety. It's safe for me to share. It's safe for you. And I'm going to hold what you share with me in a safe place. And that then starts to build that bridge of it's okay to talk to him. It's okay to talk to her. I can open up. And that starts to build that bridge of trust that we're talking about here, which is so crucial for them to recognize that they can let the story about us go and vice versa.
So I think there's some unifying factors in both of our examples. I noticed that in both examples, there was an effort to circle back to that vulnerable area after the misunderstanding, which I see a lot of people be like, nope, I'm just going to sweep it all under the rug. We're not going to talk about it. But if that's an excellent way to reinforce those negative stories.
Right, because problems do not solve themselves.
Well, if you leave everything to their own devices, people are going, you know, if you let that tense moment settle on its own, it's going to be another piece of evidence in whatever vulnerability was there. I do think that it's because, you know, you need to circle back. You know, one of the big things is you actually need to learn to recognize where these negative stories are developing and instances where evidence is piling up. You need to learn to recognize that. And, you know, both you and Ben and me and Jennifer have developed enough understanding and a healthy enough relationship that we know our own vulnerabilities, we know our partner's vulnerabilities. I think we've been doing good with that. I think on top of that, it's really excellent to have your own healthy story firmly developed and confidence in that positive story. Now, you said like a lot of us are getting stuck in our own story, and so part of this is like, okay, settling down and recognizing, okay, I need to approach this from a different angle. I need to approach this maybe with some compassion towards my partner. But there needs to be time taken to develop that healthy story. And, you know, this is often a big part of the work that I do with clients is, okay, where is this healthy story? How do we develop this? How do you have confidence in your unhealthy story? A big thing that I do, you know, if things get really tense, I try to allow for a lot of choice in narrative. And this kind of plays into that confidence. I'm saying, hey, look, I know that I'm going to be here. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be willing to talk to you. If you want to choose to say that I'm not, you know, that's up to you. But I know that I'm like, this is a kind of a mix. Like, I'm not really trying to pressure my wife, Jen, in these moments. I'm allowing for her own choice, but I'm presenting it as such. This is a little, just a small little trick. One of those, you know, if we're talking about those other people and how they have those mind games, I'm going to admit that this is one of those. But I think it's an effective technique to say, okay, I'm confident in my own story. You can choose to have this unhealthy story if you want. That's your choice. But it really kind of brings it into focus that it is a choice, how we want to interpret these situations.
Right. And so take some time yourself to think about what choice, like what story you want to have. What does that healthy relationship look like for you? If you could just take a 30,000 foot view, wipe the slate clean, if it could be anything, what would you want it to be? And then as we create that vision, it's like putting that target right in front of us, and you can't hit a target you don't see unless you're one of those amazing blindfolded people. But we're not that in life. But if you know where your target is, then you're going to be able to hit it eventually, right? Doesn't mean it's going to be perfect every time, but we will get to that destination as we hold true to it and make those course corrections to get there. So take some time to think about who you really want to be, what you really want your relationship to look like, and then build some messages within yourself and within your life, and build some evidence that this story is true, that you can have this healthy relationship. And that is what we're here to help you do. If this feels a little vague, or it feels like, wow, how do we actually do these things on our own? Well, you don't. Because we're so caught in up in our own life, in our own story, in our own circumstances, that we cannot see the whole picture, and we cannot understand everything about our partner. And navigating through these different steps is a process. And that's why we're here to help, and we encourage you guys to reach out to us here on Facebook, or book a call with us at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. And we can show you how to uncover your spouse's narrative. What are the root issues, why they believe this, and how can we help remove them so they have that safety, they can trust that this is who you really are, and they can trust the relationship again, so they can let that negative narrative go, and you can start to build and reinforce a positive narrative. The happy, healthy, thriving marriage that you really want to have. Any final thoughts on that, Mark, before we go to marriage?
I just want to point out that we do talk about this a little bit more in depth. We put together subscription material every month. This happened to be the topic of this month's subscription material. You can find it at our website, right?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, where. You can find that on highthrivecoaching.com, and it's the monthly marriage mastery. And where you get the full in-depth training on these things. So, yes.
Yeah, so there's exercises that go along with it, and you get access to the whole backlog of other trainings as well.
Yeah, pretty powerful. All right. Marriage Mythbuster. Having a baby will make the relationship better. I've seen this one in some relationships that I know personally. And as a preface, Ben and I have 8 children. So...
Well, so obviously your relationship must be great, because if one day makes your relationship better.
Right. If you just have 0 kids and I've got 8, it's got to be so easy for us.
It's got to be 8 times as good. Right.
So where does this myth come from? Why do people develop this, and how is it?
I as well have seen this kind of out in the wild, this sort of idea. And there is some elements that are, I'm not going to say true about this, but I want to help people understand where the idea comes from. So, just flat out, this is going to sound terrible, but here's the thing. Statistics show a very marked dip in overall relationship happiness after the birth of children, and it typically lasts many years. That's just out there.
Oh yeah, I've definitely seen that in my own life.
Oh yeah, no. I love my kids. I have 5 kids myself. They're great. Now, so here's the thing: having children does have some effects on a relationship. It does improve structural commitment to a relationship. meaning not the things that necessarily feel nice, but it means that your lives are tied more together, which has a buffering effect. And this is very likely how relationships actually stay together through kids, is because, hey, our happiness is lower, but we have this buffering thing. We're tied together. We need to be able to manage these kids. Not saying that children are a pain overall, but like, yeah, we get it. It like I said, it creates a boost in structural commitment. And Heather and I talk about structural commitment versus personal commitment in other podcasts here and there. I don't think we've done like a very in-depth perspective on this, but it's out there. The other thing, having children can be a huge source of growth for an individual as they shift towards being less self-centered, which can help a relationship. It can create a more productive, more proactive individual. I've seen this in my siblings. I'm sure my younger brother doesn't listen to this, so I'm going to talk about him, and he's not going to be all the wiser. But I know it is my younger brother, and even myself. Before having children, you know, it was a simpler time, and I noticed both he and myself, after having children, we really stepped up our game, became a lot more responsible, which can also have a nice positive impact on a relationship. The other factor, though, is having children can provide a huge boost in long-term happiness. That can actually be greater than level of happiness before children. So this is where it comes in. Like, you can say, okay, having the really a baby makes the relationship better. That's not true in the short term. In the short term, you know, if there's if your relationship is already strained and stressed, having children is going to add more of that and can destabilize a relationship. If you don't know how to navigate that, if you don't work on recovering from that, it's not great. You can get into these situations where, you know, you have this dip and you don't know how to get out of that again. You don't actually work towards getting out of that again. So it's a very complicated sort of thing where we have some things getting better, some things getting worse. Some things have the potential to be better in the long run if you handle it right. Some things, you know, in some situations, if you don't handle it right, having a child can have a negative overall impact because you don't recover from that very well. And so, like, it's not as simple as an idea of saying, okay, we're not doing well, so we should have a baby. That's a wrong frame of mind to go into this. It's just... it's a mistake if that's what your solution is to fix the relationship. Just so if we just leave it at that statement, that's a myth. But I hope you can understand all the different factors. It's not just a simple yes or no. There's a lot of factors that go into it, and it has an impact in many areas.
Not only many areas, but many generations. And so, you know, let's be mindful of what vision we're creating. And instead of scrambling for solutions, I feel like this comes from probably people that are scrambling for some kind of commitment, some kind of something solid to hold on to in the relationship. And so they're grasping for that structural commitment that comes when you have a children. But that is, again, not the really solid foundation that would allow a relationship to truly strengthen and thrive. And, you know, you want that for your children too. So
I want to point out that, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah, the structural commitment, not a great way to get commitment. If you really want commitment, you really want to aim for more of that personal commitment. If we need to talk about that, let us know, like, the differences between those. Let us know in the chat if you're really interested in that topic. But not the baby and structural, adding more ties together and more structural commitment, not the best way to stabilize the relationship. It's only meant to be really a buffer when that personal commitment dips a little bit.
Right. All right. So as Mark alluded to earlier, next week we're going to discuss the many ways that you can build trust in your relationship, especially if it has been broken and you are wanting to help your spouse change the narrative and trust that it's safe and secure to come back to you. So that'll be a great segment to follow up with after we talked about this. So thank you very much, Mark. We appreciate you. Hope you guys all have a wonderful day and that you take some time to think about where you really want your marriage to be and know that it is possible given time and effort to learn these skills, but you can absolutely get there. And we're happy to help you and excited to see you get there on your journey. All right. Thank you, Mark. And we'll talk to you guys again.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.